All right, you just heard Ain't Gonna Pee-Pee My Bed Tonight by
Oh,
some creepy family with a wizard in it.
Oh man, are we really doing that?
I don't think Scott wants the pee-pee
I
song.
said it on the podcast now. You have to do it.
Oh my God,
I'm
we'll
gonna
see
rip
what.
that, rip
We
that
may
song
just
and put
have
it in
to
the share.
cut it out.
Cut it out.
Welcome to the Rated A podcast number 55 for the site nerdappropriate.com. We are back from our long hiatus while we were at PAX.
Indeed. I'm still in full recovery. How are you gentlemen doing?
Does anybody have the plague yet? Anybody puking?
I am
you know, I woke up this morning with a tickle in my throat and I had some issues with the whole swallowing process. However, I believe I am surviving because I'm feeling a lot better this evening. So, keeping my fingers crossed.
How about you, Scott?
I'm actually doing all right. I think the only problem that I had was trying to catch up on sleep.
Oh, yeah. I'm
and,
still not caught up.
Yeah, and, I, you know, it's going well. I mean, I didn't get sick. You know, like, there was a day where I had a tickle in my throat, but... So far, so good. Knock on laminated particle board that looks like wood from IKEA.
There you go.
Thanks. Yay. All right.
You guys want to do a rundown of all the craziness we're talking about today? Because this is not an episode that is structured in our normal fashion. This is a completely PAX-filled episode of mischief and mayhem and malarkey and mongoid.
Let's do the rundown.
Maybe we'll just tease and say that these are things we might talk about in this and the next episode.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'll start reading and then you guys jump in and read some more. So we're going to talk about all the stuff that we saw at PAX and a lot of the stuff that we did and some of the people that we saw and some of the adventures that we had, because there are always a lot of those. We are obviously going to talk about a lot of stuff from Robot Entertainment. We played Orcs Must Die 2 and Hero Academy. We played our good buddy Chris Bromby's game Heroes of Ruin from Endspace. And let's see what else we do. Played some Max Payne 3 from Rockstar, Borderlands 2. What else, guys?
Quantum Conundrum. Scott and I got to sit down and do the only table talking we really got to do, which was Lock and Key, the card game. Ash, I believe you got to play the new Aliens from
Gearbox.
Gearbox. And
right? Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Scott spent half the convention at the Wrecketeer booth in the
I did.
Area.
I did. It was good.
Scott hit Zen mode on Steel Battalion. We'll talk about that. There's a new iOS version of the card game Nightfall. Hopefully we'll get to that. And then there's Firefall, the MMO.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, you can probably stop right there and just jump straight to XCOM, Enemy Unknown, and then we'll see where we go from there, you know, where our adventures take us throughout this podcast.
Yes, yes. And I will try to avoid the piece of pizza sitting next to my microphone.
Nice. Well, let's go ahead and dive in. This was Scott's first PAX. And,
yes.
So this was a big – this is Matt and I were talking about this for quite some time. We said either Scott is going to like love this, or he's going to curl into the fetal position and absolutely hate every second of it, because it can be quite an overwhelming experience. I mean, you're basically in a giant building with 60,000 game fans of all different types. And so it's very, very crowded, very loud. And we didn't know if you would enjoy it. So let's hear how you did.
And it's not only his first, but other than, I would say, Star Wars Celebration, which even that wasn't that big, this was his first, like, major convention that he's gone to.
Probably, you know, like you said, probably aside from Star Wars, it's probably the first, like, you know, like, meaningful convention that I've gone to, because, you know, we have MegaCon here every year, but that's not really, like, my wheelhouse, but something like video games, obviously, is up my alley and all of ours as well, but... you know, I have to admit that after the first day, like, I was feeling a little overwhelmed, you know, like, there was, like, so much stuff going on, and, you know, for someone that's never been before, like, you'll look at the program, and you're like, you'll say to yourself, man, I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to go to like simultaneously be at one panel and test out this game at the same time. And, you know, after the first day, you kind of have to recalibrate your plans and expectations for the remainder of the weekend. But certainly, like, by the end, like, by the time it was over, like, it's having a blast, having a great time. Like, I jumped up on the Rock Band stage a couple of times and, like, you know, just went crazy. And,
yeah, yeah. I mean, it is pretty much – the thing about PAX is it's just a big video game theme party essentially.
Yeah, that's the thing is that you can really – you can pick like what it is you like and what you want to do. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't think it would be that ridiculous to plan to go to PAX if for any other reason than just to meet up with like some friends that are maybe like scattered around the country and then you guys just play tabletop games, you know, for the whole weekend. Because that's what happened at night. Like, if you were, like, at any of the hotels and you walked down to the lobby, the entire lobby was full of people playing all kinds of card games and board games. So it was just ridiculous. Completely ridiculous.
Absolutely. So, overall, your impression of PAX East was a positive one, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it was fantastic. And, like, really the only thing – I mean, the thing that I probably get bugged out about the most is, like, being around a lot of people, you know, which is like, you can almost call it like, it's that, IKEA anxiety that you get.
When
you stand in like the 500 square foot room and then all of a sudden there's like 30 people around you and you just kind of lose your shit. Like, I was afraid that was going to happen and it never did. So,
there's plenty of areas in that convention center to kind of get space.
Yeah.
And they really don't overcrowd it to that extent. I feel like, if you want to go stand in a corner where no one else is and kind of like play a game on your phone or just kind of get away, it's totally feasible without too much stress at all. I mean, the floor can get a little packed, and depending if like something special is going on, like people will kind of crowd, but it's nowhere near like Comic-Con level, like freak out mode where there's just, you know, 100,000 people in one spot.
Yeah. Given the number of the number of things that are going on at any given moment between the panels, like the two expo halls, people just hanging out in the hallways, walking around the convention center, like outside or whatever.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
There's a good like disbursement of the crowd throughout the entire facility in it. Overall great experience.
And you know, one thing I have to say about this year's PAX is I really didn't encounter any assholes. And that's sort of like the whole, you know, they call it Whedon's Law there because Whedon's Law. And Wheaton, he was the keynote speaker a few years ago, and he said, you know, the main rule of PAX is don't be a dick. And so Will Wheaton's Law became sort of like the unspoken mantra of PAX, and it kind of does really kind of resonate through the facility. Like, most people are there to support one another and have a good time, and they have, you know, this common interest that is gaming, which is really, really positive and really awesome, so.
You know what I noticed a lot more of this year, Ash? I wanted to see if you noticed it too, was cosplaying.
Yeah, it was huge this year. And and also some of the best, you know, I've ever seen. And I've been to a convention, a con carny, as they say, for a very long time. And the quality of the cosplay has gotten ridiculous. I was actually talking to our friend Bethany about this online the other day, and she said something that was really actually pretty interesting. She was like, with the quality that this cosplay is getting, it's going to get to the point where it gets so that you can't really go any better because it's already getting to the point where a lot of it's almost like film quality and beyond. You know what I mean? Like the quality of some of this work we're doing is like literally cinema quality work. So it's getting kind of crazy. You know, people spend months on these costumes and just, you know, just to use for a weekend. So it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Well, I have a little adventure to tell you guys about.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
So I did a shortened PAX this year. I didn't do the full 4 days or 3.5 days because of work. I couldn't get off, so I didn't actually leave until Friday around 5. And I took a bus because I'm up in New York now, and it's actually only about a 3.5-4 hour bus ride. And when you equate like how long it takes to get to the airport and all that stuff, it's about the same. And it's considerably cheaper. It's about $20 each way to take a bus to Boston. So on the way up, I was running late, and it worked out, though. I caught the next bus, and they let me on without charging me. And they were like, yeah, go ahead. And I took the bus and got up there. Everything was fine. Saw you guys. It was great. The way home, you guys had to go to the airport earlier than I had to go to the bus stop.
Okay.
So I just kind of traveled with you guys. and figured, well, you know, I'll see if I can get on the earlier bus and head home. And sure enough, I walked up and it was like perfect timing. The bus that was leaving the hour before mine was like at the bus station getting ready to load up. And I walked up and I said, hey, you know, I'm not leaving until an hour from now. Can I get on this one? They said, yeah, sure. Let me on the bus. Everything was great. I'm on the way home, driving through Connecticut. Everything's good. We hit the city. We get through the Bronx. We're in Harlem. We take a right down, like 117th. And all of a sudden it goes, bam! And then the bus, all the power goes out in the bus and it just rolls to a stop.
Oh, what?
And the bus driver goes, like, stands up and he's like, I don't know what just happened. No one move. And everybody's like, well, can we just get off? And he's like, nope, no one's leaving. Stay on the bus. So we're all, like, just sitting there, and everybody pulls out their phone and starts figuring out where we are. And sure enough, the bus just died. The battery, like, exploded in the bottom or something, and we can
no
longer
move.
Too
much power. Too much power.
So they, he, like, radios into dispatch, and dispatch is like, if people want to get off, just let them get off. And we had all looked it up, and there was, like, a train station a block away, so we all just got off and went to the train station and went home. But it extended my trip. I ended up getting home about the same time I would have if I took the later bus.
Oh, shit.
But I got a scenic tour through Harlem on the way.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
That's amazing.
Ridiculous.
Well, we're glad you survived. Although yeah, Harlem seems to be pretty nice these days.
Yeah, it's not a life-threatening place. It's not. I wasn't walking through like,
not,
oh, God.
It's not Harlem of the 80s.
No. There's not a single part of New York that's that of the 80s.
It's not Superfly?
No. No, pretty safe. No one's pulling a switchblade on me.
Oh, my God.
So what else? So let's see. Scott and I started off. We went, Michael Cohen, our buddy Cohen, went, and it was his first PAX as well. And we both, all three of us arrived early. We took the same flight up, and we kind of bummed around the city for a bit. We walked around MIT. We got some strange Colorado-Mexican fusion food. I don't even know what it was called, but it tasted really good at the time.
You just pile it up and put it in a bowl.
Exactly.
Man.
And then that evening we went to the pre-PAX game swap, my friend Allie Thresher from Harmonix. And it was very similar to last year's. It was much, I think it was more organized, actually. It started a bit earlier, about the same number of people. But this time you were issued a ticket when you went in. And if you've never done one of these game swaps before, you bring however many games you want, you get a ticket, and then your ticket tells you how many games you can trade for. And then when your number is called, you go up and you swap your game out, and you go home with some.
Oh, they did number calling this time, huh?
Yeah, they did number calling. And that made a lot more sense because there wasn't that mad rush / dog pile. But it was cool. You know, it was like a really positive, relaxing kind of vibe, and we got to talk to Allison for a bit and just kind of hang out.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it turns out, I don't know if you remember the guy from Middlesex, that guy, Nate.
Yeah.
You remember him? He owns that bar now.
Oh, awesome.
So he was just last year he was just the bartender and now it's his bar, and he was going to give us free drinks and stuff, but I don't drink. So that kind of defeated that purpose, but he was like super nice and remembered us and everything. So shout out to Middlesex Lounge in Cambridge. Go there.
Holla.
Drinks
and
stuff.
Yeah, really swank, like cool bar. It's the kind of place that, I mean, I don't know if we really have it around where I am now, and we definitely don't have it in Orlando, but it's like slightly upscale, just enough that it's like a nice place to take a date and kind of hang out and sit.
Yeah.
It's a cool place.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you're going to PAX East next year, I'm kind of hoping that it's back at the game swaps back at Middlesex and we will see you there.
Awesome.
If we're still kicking.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
it's very, very hopeful.
I know.
Very,
wow,
optimistic outlook.
Ash is in a great mood.
If I'm still alive,
oh,
might be dead.
we should
it's
say
been a long work week. Damn it!
I know. I was going to say this is the very tail end of a work week at 9:30 at night on a day that you worked, which you're up super early usually.
Yeah,
and it's Friday the
13th. This is like the exact opposite of what a normal podcast would be.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's true. I'm in high spirits though. So we have so many fucking games to talk about. I don't even know where to begin. Let's go ahead and start off with something all of us are excited about, which is the Robot Entertainment booth, which I think, well, for Scott and I, this was the first thing we did when we got early entry for press on Friday morning, And the first booth that we both stopped at was Robot, because it was literally the first one that we saw. We didn't we didn't have an agenda this time. We didn't have any early 9 a.m. appointments. So we just kind of hit the floor and we saw Robot. We're like, hell, let's go. So, and then later on, you guys went to the appointment, which were our actual, you know, interview slash appointment with them. So what did you guys think of Orcs Must Die 2? Let's tell our audience about it.
I thought it was awesome. Did you guys play it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I played too.
Yeah.
Did you guys play the new character or did you play the old one?
I actually never played the original game, so everything I did was new to me.
I played the Sorceress, yeah.
You did?
Yeah, Scott and I played together, so he played the main guy, I played the Sorceress.
So they've added this new class called the Sorceress, which is a female kind of long-range character, and you get some new abilities, which I thought were really awesome and put a really cool twist on the game. One of the abilities that I took was you could program, I'm blanking on the word that one, he's like program the other guy, the bad guys, to fight for you. Take over an enemy, essentially, and he starts fighting on your side. You charm him. Which was awesome. I thought it was really cool to be able to have like a rush of guys come out and take their biggest guy or their baddest, most badass guy and like charm him and have him immediately turn around and start fighting all the other guys. I took one where I could summon this humongous skeleton creature that would like stomp around the stage and fight for me. It just is a really cool twist on it just being traps. You know, it felt a little bit more interactive than it just being like what it was before, which was, you know, the classic kind of tower defense, but with the twist of you being first person and running around and shooting. This gave some extra powers and made it really cool. The thing we did learn about this game is that it's going to be Steam only. There will be no Xbox release. There will be no PS3 release.
Yeah,
this time.
I was kind of surprised by that, but after I heard why, it kind of made sense.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty forthcoming. I don't think it's anything, and I don't think it's any kind of hidden knowledge, but basically he said that they just didn't do that well on the 360. They weren't happy with the results, but that they did like gangbusters on Steam, and they said they're going to support that network and put it back on Steam.
Yeah.
I can't blame them, you know?
Yeah. Well, there was also, there was an interview, a really well done interview with, Robot in, this week's Game Informer magazine, and they were talking briefly about how the Xbox Live Marketplace with the new way the GUI is, it makes it really, really hard for people to actually access independent titles. Unless it's like the featured title, you have to dig through a lot of menus to look through stuff. And it is really, I've noticed, like I haven't really had the desire to look up new games on the Marketplace because they are pretty hard to find right now, you know?
I've been going on Xbox.com. This is a total tangent. I've been going on Xbox.com and looking them up. That's how I search to see what arcade titles are out now. I don't even go on the Xbox itself.
Yeah, it's kind of impossible to browse through the catalog and just look for something that you're trying to find.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We digress.
Yes.
Yes.
What's going on with Hero Academy?
Well, I wanted to add one more thing with Orcs Must Die too, because the other new feature is you guys mentioned is co-op.
Yes.
And it is awesome, and it's so much fun to play. It kind of takes some of the stress off of managing multiple doors opening up, but in a good way. I don't feel like it was less challenging. It felt more like it was less, like, frantic.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't feel like I was just, like, wildly running around.
I agree. So, co-op is always fun in anything, so now if they can just figure out some sort of, you know, I don't know, voice communication that's actually reliable, it doesn't eat your bandwidth, I'm all for it.
Yeah. All right, so
Cool.
Talk about Hero Academy.
Cool. So we hung out with the lead developer of Hero Academy for a while the first day, and then back with our interview and actually talked to their team and stuff, and really, really impressed with how excited they were about the title and sort of the history of the title. I mean, I believe the team was only like 5 or 6 people that worked for six months. 6 people?
Yeah, 6 people.
Yeah, 6 people that worked for 30 days. And they, you know, spit out Hero Academy, and it's been selling very, very well, doing really well. And I don't think that it's abusing the microtransaction formula. You could conceivably buy Hero Academy and have a pretty good time playing with just the console. And that's it. I mean, you could play that game endlessly with just the console and still enjoy it. And every other army that you buy is like $2, and they're all incredibly different. And, You know, if you want to get all fancy, you can buy extra colors and stuff. But that's all, you know, only cosmetic stuff is what you're buying with Hero Academy. So, you know, we briefly talked about what the kind of the future of the franchise holds. And they were saying that they do want to extend the roster of armies to be between, like, you know, I think he said 8 and 12 total eventually over time. They'll probably slow down because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to burn themselves out. But I don't know. I'm like, you know, we're huge fans of this game. Scott's mad at me right now. Look, he's nodding. Look, he is.
Oh, this is the problem. I mean, see, I don't blame Robot Entertainment for this because, like I said to you in the text, is that my weakness with strategy games in general is that I have no patience. Like, I don't have the patience to wait for, like, a game to unfold. Like, I just get in there, like, I take whatever the first guy is, like, in the card pile, I send him out there, and I start attacking with it. Like, I have, like, no advanced strategies, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm just mixing it up, and that ultimately leads to my downfall, and I probably need to exercise a little more caution. But very fun.
It is a fun game. So, Hero Academy.
Yeah, they did say Android, right?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. They said it is. You know, they're currently working on it for Android, like literally today. They were just talking about it online, and the idea is when it comes out for Android, of course, it's going to be cross-platform, so Android is going to be able to play with iOS users, which is awesome. And you know, big things coming from that company. I honestly think the Hero Academy franchise is going to grow. It seemed to me like this is the first step in a series of Hero Academy games and maybe just, like, you know, just the beginning of something much larger. That's kind of the vibe I was getting from the devs, you know. They kind of seemed like...
That's what I think.
They were kind of like, oh, you know, they had this whole big story about what the Hero Academy is, and I'm like, well, where is this, you know, where is this going? Because there's no story in the game. It's all in your head, yeah. But it's going to be in a game eventually. So,
just the beginning, man.
Yeah,
it's just
super beginning. Excited about it.
And I think all three of us walked away saying that studio is by far one of our favorite places to visit at PAX, that those guys are just always energetic and want to talk about their game and are super excited and happy to be there and happy to be, you know, doing what they do for a living.
Yeah.
And we always leave, like, super happy. Like, all of us always leave with this, like, new excitement about gaming.
Yeah.
After talking about entertainment.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I kind of, like, since they are, I mean, you know, they're kind of the offshoot of a larger studio, but since they are, like, still considered an indie studio, I kind of get the same vibe from Robot when I would see, like, a really great band that not many people know about, and I would, like, leave that venue being like, that band fucking rules, and they're going to be huge. And that's, like, the same exact feeling I get from Robot Entertainment. It's just, like, this company, the next great game, not to say that they haven't already, but the next great big game in, like, another 5 to 10 years, you know? There's going to be something fucking phenomenal that comes out of that studio, so.
Yeah.
So awesome.
Cool.
We went into the special room.
Oh, yes, we're going to talk about this now.
So anyways, we had an appointment with Square Enix. We were really excited about this one because one of the games Square Enix is putting out is Heroes of Ruin, which is a new 3DS title that our friend Chris Bromby art directed for Endspace Games, which is local to Orlando. We kind of heard about this game pretty early on from Chris, and I got excited because I was like, this is what I want from a 3DS game before even playing it. And then we sat down, and Ash and I got to co-op through a level, essentially. Where he died and abandoned me early.
I did.
So, Ash, I kind of want to get you. I think you have a deeper depth of knowledge on this type of game, and I want to see what your comparisons you drew from it were from about the 20-minute demo we got to do.
Well, it's definitely a dungeon crawler. It's definitely based around the acquirement of new loot and new equipment. And so, for those of you that don't know what Heroes of Ruin is, you know, it is a Diablo-esque game set in randomly generated dungeons where you can control one of four different heroes that all have, like, different ability trees and different ability sets. And the idea is, of course, to get through these dungeons and acquire new abilities and new loot, and then you know, go through the story. So there are quests, and it's really, really insanely ambitious for a 3DS title. I mean, there's nothing even remotely like it on the 3DS. So, I mean, it's definitely in the vein of Torchlight or Diablo or any of the old kind of classic dungeony games.
Like Gauntlet.
Yeah, except for with loot, you know.
With loot, yeah. I mean.
So, you played as the melee character, and I played as a roguish, I guess he's sort of like a archer slash gunslinger type character. And
I was kind of the tank.
Yeah, yeah. And as I progressed, I leveled a couple times and was able to unlock some abilities. And abilities are all bound to, you know, different keys on the 3DS. And they were really flashy. Everything looked pretty. I know I got this one grenade ability that just looked phenomenal on the small. This, I think, is the title that the 3DS really needs because it is has a lot of depth. There's just a whole lot to it. And this is the type of game that, like, if you're on vacation, this is just, like, what you need to survive to kind of scratch that RPG itch, you know? Because there's nothing like it right now on the 3DS at all. Okay. There's no, like, deep RPG slash, you know, hack and slash action game either.
I don't know if you noticed this, but we didn't get to play it, but also in that room was a new Kingdom Hearts game for the 3DS as well.
Oh, really?
Which is interesting to me because it means that Square Enix is one of the few publishers putting out, like, real deal games for the 3DS, and I thought that was kind of interesting. But I really enjoyed it. I thought the you know, not to kiss Chris's ass, but I thought the art style was phenomenal. I thought it looked great on such a small screen, and when I popped the 3D on, it just they did a really amazing job of making the environment part of the 3D, as opposed to making it like, oh, the character looks 3D. Like, that didn't change. It changed a little bit. What really happened was all of a sudden the environment, like, expanded out, and I had trees that were, like, layering over top of the ground, you know, and, like, it really looked like you were running through a real environment all of a sudden.
Well, didn't the person that we spoke with while we were playing Heroes of Ruin, didn't he comment that Chris kind of, like, kept in mind the fact that the game was going to be in 3D, like, during the design of the environments?
He said that they toyed with it a lot because they had to, like, dial back. Like, they started doing stuff, and it started to actually get in the way.
So they
kind of dialed it back so that the environment wasn't, like, insane, but that you were running through a real environment while you were doing it.
Cool.
And it played off. My powers felt great. Fighting felt really good. You know, it's kind of hack and slash. It's not the most in-depth fighting system ever. But I really enjoyed it. I had a blast. It's like making me excited that it's coming out for a system that is currently not charged and sitting in my bedroom, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm happy for you guys. I mean, I still want to get the Resident Evil title for the 3DS, but that's a whole other.
Well, I was going to ask, Ash, did it make you consider a 3DS or a handheld at all? Or are you still kind of like, you know, really
playing? You know, I have a long history of handheld systems. I had the Atari Lynx. I had the Game Gear.
Ooh, I had a Game Gear.
I had the Neo Geo Pocket. Actually, still have all of these systems in boxes. So I'm going to shy away from handheld systems because I'm notorious for buying four or five games and then dust collectors. So I've become frugal at my old age, and I'll probably just stick to my phone for a little bit.
Cool.
So, yeah. But I am excited for Heroes of Ruin. I think it's going to be a great title.
Yeah, I mean, everything I played made it feel pretty awesome. So
it's a game. It's a game that. Go. Oh, sorry. I was going to say it's a game it's a game that's really needed on the 3DS. So it's more games like this are needed on the 3DS. And the thing that we didn't really get to experience a lot of, but you guys talked about was the fact that it was going to be like online with voiceover IP.
That's true.
Local and internet multiplayer with like friend filtering and all that stuff. So
they didn't talk about how they're pulling off the voiceover IP too much, but he did say that the mic on the 3DS or a headset mic would work.
They make headset mics. Yeah.
The actual bandwidth worries me a little bit on that thing, but I guess it would probably work. It's just Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Do you guys want to talk about Quantum Conundrum, since we're in the
same space.
So like this was like what, you know, I wrote that this was my sort of my surprise hit of PAX East because I didn't really know anything about this game coming in. It wasn't on my radar too much, and it was funny because when we went to our Square Enix appointment, they said they were like, "Welcome, sit down at this TV and start playing this game. And like, that was really all the instruction that we got. And you guys kind of looked at each other and were like, Scott, you play this, and, you know, like, we're going to go get sandwiches. So I sit down and I discover that Quantum Conundrum is a puzzle game. And it's one of those sort of like first person adventure puzzler, a little bit of platforming involved, with like a really interesting art style. It's kind of like a family friendly art style where you're exploring this scientist's mansion. And I the way the story goes is that at some point in the story, like early in the story, the scientist is your uncle and he goes missing. And then you continue on through the mansion, sort of like exploring all of his crazy experiments and trying to locate him and find out what happened. The game uses as its primary game mechanic sort of this, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like an interdimensional something or other.
Samoflange
is something. You have this, anyways, you have this device that lets you switch in and out of four different dimensions, or at least there's four that we... that were alluded to in the demo, but we only got to experience two of them. And you use these dimensions to progress through the levels. So the two dimensions that we experienced were called Fluffy Dimension and Heavy Dimension. And what that allows you to do is kind of what it sounds like. In Fluffy Dimension, everything becomes super light and allows you to carry heavy things like sofas and safes. And then in the Heavy Dimension, things become both heavy and dense. So there was a challenge in which I was trying to get by a set of lasers, and the heavy dimension not only made something heavier, but it made an object dense enough that the laser couldn't cut through, and I was able to pass by the laser. So,
by the way, you guys listening should note that Scott was figuring out these insanely advanced puzzles within about 5 seconds each puzzle. He'd be just like look at it and be like, oh, this is what I must do. This is precisely how I get through this puzzle. And I was I read it and I was like, I don't even know what the fuck is going on. This guy's just like, he pretty much beat Quantum Conundrum in front of Kim Swift, who's the creator of Portal, and she was just looking at him like, who is this savant? How may I bear his children?
I don't know that she said that, but...
I remember sitting there eating sandwiches, and we're like, lightly talking about this game with no idea that the creator of this game and Portal is like sitting, or one of the creators of Portal is like sitting behind us, and we're like, oh, this is cool. It's like a puzzle game. Oh, yeah, blah, blah. And, like, somebody's like, well, Kim Swift's sitting right there. She was the lead on this game. And we're like, oh, hey! How you doing?
Yeah.
We don't know your face.
It was horrible.
You know, not for a lack of our own professionalism, but we just didn't know.
Yeah.
We didn't lurk her. You know?
No.
We can't lurk everyone in the world.
We did not lurk her.
Yeah, I was, like, eating a hoagie, like, hey, Matt, make sure you put my sandwich in your review of this game.
Oh man,
it was bad.
But anyways, Quantum Conundrum is going to be an Xbox Live, I think PSN, and probably a Steam or PC title as well. It comes out this summer. It's really interesting. Like, obviously, I was trying to not use the P word as much as possible, just to be fair to the other people on the team that created the game and had nothing to do with Portal. But it's really like, it's a different game dynamic. I mean, it's similar to Portal, yes, but it's
a puzzle game. You know, like, it's like,
right.
Like, everybody wanted to compare it to Portal, I think, strictly because of her, because I think if she wasn't on the team, you might say Portal just in the fact that it's a puzzle game. But I think the only reason you compare it to Portal is because Portal is the other massive puzzle game that exists, you know?
Yeah. And it is kind of like
elephant. It's like, it's like purple and yellow portals, like, that you're running through. It's a completely different kind of mechanic that you're using.
Yeah, I just didn't want to get into a situation where you're like running up to Mark Hamill and you're like, "Hey, man, remember when you were like Luke Skywalker?" And he's like, "Yeah, I know."
I got it.
Okay. Yeah. So, Quantum Conundrum, like, that's my surprise hit of PAX East, and look for it this summer. That's What's awesome. Next?
Well,
one of those choices.
We're going to plan the podcast on the podcast again?
Well, I just want to talk about Magic with Team Unicorn.
I was reading old Twitter while I was at the convention, and I saw Team Unicorn was playing Magic the Gathering just with whoever down in the tabletop gaming section. And we had interviewed Team Unicorn last year, and they were cool enough to do an interview with us. And we've kind of kept in touch with them periodically, you know, with different projects and stuff they've been working on. And so Matt and I showed up, and we befriended a bunch of Magic playing young gamers and talked with them a little bit. You did. You were friendly.
I was chit chatting. No, I mean, I was nice, but they didn't really care about me.
Oh, okay. They loved you, man.
They pushed me out.
They did. Slowly. They were eager to play some Magic. And the only thing about playing against Team Unicorn is you had to have your own deck, and I don't have my own deck anymore. Although I just realized today that I probably had a deck that they gave me for attending PAX, but I didn't realize that at the time. Because everybody got a deck, right?
It started.
Yeah, you guys kept refusing to play me in the hotel room.
I know. I was just too old and tired. So I borrowed a deck from this kid, and he was super nice, and it was his birthday, and they sang him happy birthday, and then I played.
But you got them to sing happy birthday, didn't you? Then you're like, oh, it's your birthday, like really loud.
Yeah, like, I tried to embarrass him, but I probably made his life. That was probably like the happiest moment of his life. He was supposed to be a corner man because I borrowed his deck, and I played against Rylea Vanderbilt, who's one of the unicorns, and she kicked my ass. But she did have the help of like six tournament players. Like they were supposed to be helping me because I hadn't played in like 10 years, but they basically switched sides because she's much more attractive than I am.
I don't know though, man, because I think she just had a more interesting deck, because I was watching these guys like crowd. Literally, I was standing right behind Ash, and then they would like start pushing in on me, and there's only like five of them. And it's not like there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And they'd start kind of pushing in on me, and I'd like step back a little, and then step back a little, and then like a few minutes later, I'm standing like 3 feet behind everybody, and they've completely crowded around you guys. I can't even see you anymore. And I realized, I was like, oh, you know, because my first initial thought is like, oh, well, there's two pretty girls, you know, sitting there playing Magic. That's probably what they're crowding around for. And it totally wasn't. They were crowding around to get into the game of Magic. Like, oh, you got that card? Oh, what did he draw? He should do this. He should do this. And I was like, oh, it was amazing. It was amazing to watch that. It was so neat to see, like, you'd think these poor nerdy, like, high school kids would be super into the hot girls doing the thing that they love in front of them. And instead they're just like, what'd she draw? Screw that card. I'm like, what?
Yeah. So, no, it was a super fun experience, though. And they were really, really nice. They retweeted our articles and stuff about it. And they're always really supportive. So thank you, Team Unicorn. And they actually have a super amazing project we're not allowed to discuss yet, but we will be able to discuss it in a couple months, and we'll probably have them on and stuff. So keep your ears peeled for Team Unicorn.
I'm glad you included that, because I thought it was a really cool experience to see everybody get into Magic.
It was. I really enjoyed it. It was fun. A fun little pit stop from playing games.
So let's talk about a game that I actually was not super excited about, but walked away like thinking very highly of it, which is Rockstar's Max Payne 3.
Yeah. Rockstar had a huge presence this year, as they often do. So they had a huge, I don't know, like a tenth of the floor was the Rockstar area.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, Scott is the only one out of the three of us that I think has like a true memory of the old Max Payne games. Like, I remember briefly playing them, but they never really resonated with me. So
I enjoyed them for gameplay. I never was like super into the story or anything.
I was into the story, but you know, to be fair, I probably played them like last year.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe like within the last 2 years, I probably played them. I didn't play them when they originally came out.
I played Max Payne 2 when it came out, and I played Max Payne 1 when Max Payne 2 came out. So I played them both at the same time.
Ah.
So I was immediately kind of shocked by how incredibly violent it is. For every group of enemies, like the last shot that you get on a group of enemy goes into almost like a close-up animation of the, you know, the hit detection of the bullets, and it is absolute carnage. I mean, people getting like their faces just blown off, and you know, just giant chunks of skull flying off. And
are we getting to a point of being uncomfortable?
Oh, yeah, the violence. Like, it is like it's like, insanely realistic, you know.
Yeah, like we laughed. Like something like you, I think you got a kill shot that like blew a guy's skull out.
Yeah.
And you could see it. Like it literally blew his skull out. And we were all like, oh my God. And we're like all laughing. But like immediately after, I was like, this is horrible. What are we laughing at right now?
It was absolute carnage. But I mean, that's, you know, that's Max Payne, like gritty, you know, sort of noir, just like as dark as dark can be. What I want to ask Scott about is how did you find the gameplay? Because that's what is really important about a title like this. Story, I'm sure, is going to be great. I'm sure it's going to be well written. Rockstar is known, especially in recent years, for having incredible stories. But how did you find the actual gunslinging?
Well, I will say first that the story was my major concern with this game, but we talked about that in there was a departure. You know, obviously Remedy is not working on this game. They're doing Alan Wake now. But the thing that I thought was pretty cool about it is that the guy we spoke with told us that the Rockstar team showed this game to the Remedy developers, and they were like, they got their sort of like their blessing on the game, which I thought was kind of neat. So it's not like if there are any like super big Max Payne fans out there wondering, you know, like, did you get your Alan Wake and my Max Payne or vice versa? It don't worry about it. I think it's going to be okay. The thing about the gameplay is I had a hard time with aiming, and maybe that's just something with the sensitivity of the thumbstick. But the thing that's really cool about Max Payne, this game in particular, is that the first thing the guy said to us when we started playing is he said, just abuse the bullet time, abuse the bullet dodge. Like, it's pretty much unlimited. You just keep doing it. And that's kind of the fun part of Max Payne. That's what makes it different from like Kane and Lynch or Gears of War or any other game that uses like a cover mechanic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So like that's really the point of the game, is that there's sort of like a almost like an art form to what you decide to do in the game. Like, you can use the bullet time to slow down time and to fire at people, but then the bullet dodge is a little different because it sends your character sort of like dodging, like jumping from cover to cover, and you can spin in like 360 degree direction while you're doing this bullet dodge, and it's totally ridiculous. The animations are insane, and just kind of like shoot guys all around you as if you're like part of a movie. And I think that's what the appeal of this game is for people that are looking for gameplay, you know, that's what sets this game apart from games that might be similar to it.
Yeah.
I think the other two things that I noticed from, because I didn't actually play, I just kind of watched, the two things that really stuck out to me, one being the physics engine is unbelievable in this game.
Yep.
He was pointing out some things. He was like, oh, watch when he's jumping through the air. He'll like guard himself when he's going to fall on the ground. And like, I mean, they're really minute things, but they made the game just feel so amazing when you're watching him. Like, he would dive through the air, and when he would start to roll to his side and he was going to land, he'd put his arm up on his head so he wouldn't hit the ground. Like, and it's like, what? Like, who is thinking of that in a video game? And it looks amazing. And the other thing is, they did reveal that the story is going to be linear. It's not going to be a Rockstar open world game. So that, you know, what I'm hoping we avoid is Mexico syndrome in this game, which would be
diarrhea?
A lot more fun.
Is that with diarrhea?
No, that's when you do the same mission 17,000 times over and over again and get tired of it and just want to leave whatever area you're in because you're tired of doing that area.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like the linear storyline is what a Max Payne game is.
Yeah.
So it's like I said, it's totally still in the vein of what the first two games were, just without like the creepy dream sequences when you're running on like a pathway of blood with like babies screaming in the background. And
for anyone
that's played the original games, they'll know what I'm talking about. And that part is where your Alan Wake went, if that's what you're looking for.
See, I played them and I don't remember that at all. I'd have to play them again to remember.
Oh, there's all kinds of like, the guy is like, Max Payne is like drug induced most of the game and like has these like nightmarish like levels where the house is on fire and is like his family's being murdered and
stuff
like that.
Well, the health packs are pain pills.
Like, yeah, right. you're popping Oxycontin.
Yeah, as you're getting hurt, like, you need more pills. Eat more pills.
That's the other thing that we should mention. No regenerating health. You need to take pain pills to bring your health back. And that's such a weird thing in this day and age, you know, of regenerating health bars. So,
well, I think they really made a Max Payne game. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it really... I think that's awesome. You know, I think Rockstar didn't take a property and just cash in on it. They went, you know, we're going to make a fucking Max Payne game and do it right.
Yep.
And it looked awesome and played awesome. So
indeed.
Excited. I'm jealous of this one. You guys got to play Borderlands 2 on Friday when I wasn't there, and I never made it to the booth. So
we squandered away our media hour on this most of the time. So we went in there and we hopped on a couple consoles and played Borderlands 2, and it is beautiful. It is everything you would ever want out of a Borderlands title. I got to play as the Siren. What did you play as, Scott? Did you play as the Gunzerker?
No, I played as the Siren, and Cohen played as the Gunzerker.
Awesome. What I liked about the Siren, a different version of the last Siren, the whole phase lock ability, while it took me a while to figure out exactly what to do because I was rusty with my Borderlands, phase lock with the new Siren actually lets you basically paralyze an enemy, and then depending on how you spec, you can have a variety of different effects. The effect that I chose is while an enemy is paralyzed with this phase lock, it does an AoE heal to anyone that's around the paralyzed enemy. So you can basically turn that enemy into a healing node. And as you progress and actually go through your skill trees, you can do all sorts of different customization to like build, you know, the character that you want to build. So that is super, super awesome. And the new guns that she came pre-equipped with about 4 guns. They all felt phenomenal. I mean, you know, they just have kind of knocked this one out of the park.
Is this that thing we see when someone makes a really phenomenal first game, and then for the second game, instead of trying to rebuild the wheel, they just kind of go, hey, we're going to make this better. We're just going to take that first game, we're going to make it look better, we're going to make it play better, and we're going to improve the story. Is that what it feels like? This is what they did?
Yeah. From what I understand, the game, you know, Borderlands 2 is going to be longer. It's going to have an actual, like, cohesive, concrete narrative that's actually, you know, supposed to be really deep, which I'm excited about the whole narrative aspect to it. I hear the skill trees are actually 30% deeper than the first game, so you have more options for these new character classes. Yeah.
Ha.
And I'm sure you guys saw this. There's a press release while we were actually out there. They are releasing a 5th class on launch that is a DLC class.
Of course.
Yeah.
Got to buy that copy.
Yeah, it's probably going to come with new copies of the game, so you can't really trade it in. But 5 classes, so I'm pretty excited about it. What did you think, Scott?
That is awesome.
I mean, I thought it was great. Like you said, it took me a while to figure out how to play Borderlands again. And then once I figured out what we were doing, we were like, it was kind of like riding a bike. We're off to the races again, like killing bad guys, taking loot. Like, I think they set us up with some good weapons, and I just picked up other ones out of habit, you know, because like that's what you do. You just pick up weapons and go crazy. So we went crazy. We actually completed the mission that we were given. And I think one of the things that they're doing with the missions this time around is that they're giving you a choice. And the choice isn't like Mass Effect choices. We're just talking about like, you know, in the mission that we ran, you found some risque photos of Moxie, and you could either return them to her or give them to this other guy. And I don't think doing one or the other really impact like what happens in the story, but it's just kind of like a funny way to put some variety in there and like give you something to do other than just like
probably go from you a different ending to the mission, right? I would assume.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but it's like instead of just like walk to this marker, get this item, go back to this other marker, there's actually like a little bit more engagement with what's actually happening in that particular narrative for that mission, which I thought was kind of cool too.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm excited about that one. So Scott, and one of the things last year that I did not get to do pretty much at all that I really regretted, and said to Scott, I was like, man, you're going to be excited. They have a huge tabletop gaming area at PAX every year. You know, we definitely need to go check it out. And this year Scott found out about Cryptozoic, one of the card makers, was putting out a game about the comic book series Lock and Key, which I have yet to read, although I do have a Kindle Fire now, and I've been reading a ton of comics on it. I think that's going to be one of them. But you have read, and Amy has read, a frequent guest / friend of the podcast. And
it is awesome.
Yeah, so we went over, and we did an initial playthrough, kind of a shortened demo, and then we went back on Sunday, and you and I and Amy got to play kind of our own private demo. And they let us play longer. We played almost a full game.
Yeah, if not for having to leave the convention, we pretty much played the entire game. Which
I think she was going to let us play till the end. Yeah. She was just like, oh, yeah, just kept playing with us. So, Scott, why don't you explain the mechanics a little, and then we'll talk about how we liked it.
Okay, so the game is designed to be what I call cooperatively competitive. In the Lock and Key comic book, there's like a trio of siblings who, you know, while they're family, they often disagree on, you know, things like families often do. So in this particular game, the team of like whoever's playing faces a series of challenges. So in order to overcome the challenge, you all have to work together, but then ultimately only one person will get credit for overcoming the challenge. So, and it's all number based. It's simple math. So like a challenge card will be flipped over. The number will be a 5, for example. And then at that point, each player decides how many of their cards are going to put down. The cards are numbered as well. So each player decides how many cards are going to put down to try to beat that challenge. So if the team, if all the players as a whole, if they're the sum of their cards is equal to or greater than the challenge number, then the challenge is beaten. But the individual player who put down the most, the highest number count will actually get that challenge. And that sounds pretty standard, but the cool thing is that each card actually has sort of like a runner-up prize. And the runner-up prize is almost like a deck-building kind of prize in the sense that...
Well, sometimes it was almost better.
Right. And that depends on your strategy for how you want to win.
Yeah.
And then the
kind of wrench in the game was they have key cards.
Right. So a big part of the Lock and Key comic book series are these keys. And the keys in the comic book allow these characters to do all kinds of ridiculous things like change the color of their skin, become ghosts, grow bigger, turn into an animal. And in this game, the keys basically allow your cards to transform in different ways or allow you to take extra cards off the draw pile to increase your chances of winning the challenges. So the keys are kind of like the thing that balance out the game, because if you start to lose, chances are you'll start to acquire more keys as like second, like runner-up prizes.
Yeah.
And so the keys help players that are lagging behind catch up to the players that are winning more challenges.
And there's definitely a sort of Munchkin-ish element to it of being a little devious towards your co-players. Like there were cards that you could totally fuck with the other players with, like take 2 strength cards out of their hand and they become yours. And it's like, well, that doesn't sound like that big of a deal until you realize that you don't redraw a certain number of cards each turn. You just get 1 card for every turn. So you could feasibly wipe a person out of having any cards to play whatsoever and almost sideline them from the game.
Right.
Which is, I'm sure, a strategy that you can take.
Let's see.
So
what
how
else
did you like it?
I thought the game was fantastic. And the thing for fans of the comic book series to note is that all of the cards use artwork from the comic books. The other cool thing is that there's 3 decks of cards. So there's the strength cards, which is your draw pile. The challenge cards, which are the points that you win, like the victory points in the game. And then there's key cards. And the cool thing about the key cards is that they're all foiled. So, like the actual key on the card is like foiled. And then the rest of a card just looks like a normal card. So when you pick it up, it's just kind of neat. It has like that shiny
cool
look to it. And, the game is not so complicated that, it's really accessible. So you could bring in, novice card players to the game and teach them how to play like within like 20 minutes and then everybody would be having a good time.
We picked it up in about 15 minutes, I think, and we were totally understanding the concept of all the different cards and what you could do. I had a blast too. I thought it was a great game. I think it got even more fun when Amy joined us. It was the 3 of us with the dealer and she was kind of playing too. And it like that 4 player minimum, I think was right. The person who was demoing the game kind of said, she's like, you know, I really think 6 is like the optimal number. She's like, 4 is probably the minimum and 8 is probably too many. Like 6 is like perfect. And I could see that because 4 was like really fun, but I could see a couple more people adding a really cool mix to the table.
When you
started getting a bunch of key cards out, it got really interesting. Like the play started changing a lot.
Yeah. The other thing is that if you imagine, in a 4 player game where there can feasibly be 2 people that get something from completing a challenge, that means that like 50% of the time you're going to be getting something. But if you increase that, if you make that a 6 player game now, it would really change people's minds about whether or not they actually want to play cards to help you beat the challenge. And then at that point, you can bluff and make people throw cards away for nothing, and then go back, you know, go back on them and try to win challenges after they throw cards away. So that's really the strategy with a larger group.
Yeah, so a great card game. I think it was only like $25, you said, on Amazon or whatever.
Yeah, right now it's like $25 on Amazon. If for whatever reason you can get to a convention to buy the game from them, they told me that they give away like a promo additional like set of key cards, maybe one or two key cards that go with it that they only give away at conventions.
Nice.
But it's definitely worth it for casual groups of card gamers.
So, Ash, you were the only one, I think, that got to play this game.
What is on the list? Hold on, my thing is
Aliens Colonial Marines.
Yeah, okay, so I was really eager to play this, and this was actually the first title I think I played on Saturday morning. So I kind of...
I think, yeah, you and I walked past it, and I was like, dude, Aliens, and you turned around and just like literally walked right in the line without saying anything. I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, I was like, this is the only... Because I had heard that on Friday, you know, the line was upwards of 3.5-4 hours, and...
Wow.
You know, unless you're with larger press outlets that will remain unnamed, you know, small press doesn't really get, you know, a red carpet, which is, I'm completely fine with that. So we have to, you know, jump through some hoops as well. So I was able to get in relatively early on Saturday morning to play Aliens Colonial Marines, and I was treated to about a 15 to 20 minute meaning I didn't get to play, but the single player campaign was played for me. Or a video of it, one or the other. And, you know, the single-player campaign is beautiful. It takes place. It's the official canonical sequel of Aliens. So it actually takes place a couple months after Aliens and Alien 3. So the events of Alien 3 have happened. In other words, you know, Ripley's on the prison planet. And meanwhile, while Ripley's on the prison planet... The events of this new game are taking place up in space on the Sulaco. So you actually get to see a new team to check out what happened to the old team of Marines from Aliens and the kind of the hijinks that ensue then. Obviously, the game involves a lot of aliens. but the cool thing is the main protagonist, while it is a first-person shooter, he is voiced. So he has a whole dialogue that's going on, you know, back to the ship and everything, and he actually raises his left hand, and you can see him like hitting the communicator on his ear. So it's really visceral. It's all, you know, since it's first person, you're going to be looking through his eyes the whole time. So it definitely adds to the tension of, you know, what's going on. The cool thing is it was very slow paced, you know, walking through the ship. You have the motion tracker. It definitely felt like an Aliens experience, you know, and very, very dark. And it just looked like a whole lot of fun. Looked like a whole lot of fun.
Awesome. And you got to play multiplayer.
Yeah, so they split us up. I think it was like 6-on-6 multiplayer team deathmatch. They had the QA and devs playing as the aliens, and then all the press and other folks playing as the Colonial Marines. And it was pretty amazing. Like, I can't imagine... Well, I used to play the old Aliens game, so playing as an alien was really challenging. But it is a really, really... See, I'm kind of over team deathmatch, but this made it fun again because you're not fighting soldier against soldier. You're fighting one really super fast-moving, like, death machine versus soldiers. So controlled very, very well. You know, they did a great job with the guns and the gameplay and the movement and the lighting and the graphics. It was all top-notch. This game is a very, very solid title. I think what's going to really determine its future is how long the campaign is, if there are a lot of different multiplayer modes. You know, they're going to have to do the whole thing with unlocks and, you know, the dangling carrot and all that for multiplayer to be successful. But right now, it's looking pretty positive. So, good job, awesome. Gearbox.
So Scott, did you have a question about that game or no?
Oh, no, I just didn't hear you mention Gearbox until just that moment, so I just wanted to get that in there.
Yeah.
Should Ash and I leave the room so that you can have a minute with this next game on the podcast?
Oh, my God, no. We can just, we'll talk about this. There's enough, I think I've done enough writing on this in the past week to...
I'm going to be honest, I still don't really get what this game is. Scott played the living crap out of this game called The Wrecketeer, which is, I guess it's a game about shooting catapults, right?
It's really simple. It's a Kinect game, and it's basically Angry Birds with a ballista and castles. You know what I mean? Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Exactly, and that's why I played it so much. this is the thing, and I've talked about this on the podcast in the past, is that the Kinect is awesome, but there aren't a lot of awesome Kinect games. And that's
right.
And so you have this thing that sits on top of your TV or under your TV, and you know, you wave at it and you ask it to play Hulu videos for you, but then after that you want something. You want to do something with it other than exercise, you know what I mean? Or whatever, or yell at it or something. So the Wreckerteer is a Xbox Live Arcade title for the Kinect that will be coming out this summer. And it's essentially like an Angry Bird style game where you control this ballista and you fire shots into castle walls and try to create the most destruction and earn the most points on every level. Now, like Angry Birds, they have a different... there's a number of different types of shots. And that's really where the Kinect game functionality really, really shines here. So... what we got to experience in the demo is that there's a shot that you can sort of spin in the air like a golf ball. There's a shot that when you throw your arms over your head, the shot like explodes into like a string that you control with your arms and sort of like a imagine like a string of bullets like that you control with your arms and you crash them for like lateral damage.
Okay.
I used a shot that is sort of like a glider. So after you fire the shot, you stick your arms out and it flies like a plane. So you can go like in between obstacles to like hit the higher value targets. Game features local 2-player turn-based co-op. It has over 60 levels. You can create playlists and play your favorite levels, online leaderboards. Let's see what else. I was going to say that the thing about the game that it's like accessible for family, but it's also one of those games that if you're really like hardcore about the leaderboards, I think there is some more like score maximization going on than what you could actually see in the demo that we played, because I got the impression from talking to them that there are like secret ways to conquer each level. So there might be like, if you can explore the levels well enough, there might be like secret things hidden like behind castle walls or like underneath like a castle gate that would really like bump up the score more. But if you don't want to play that way, you don't have to.
Yeah,
you can just play for fun and make a mess of everything, which is...
They give a hint as to how many levels there will be?
They said there were over 60 levels.
Okay, so it's got a lot of replay and...
Yeah. I will say that in my 3 separate visits with the dev that I did while Scott was playing the game, he did talk about... how they built it, and they were another one of those small teams, got split off, were able to kind of build this game that they were all interested in doing and really utilizing the Kinect. And one of the things he said was that they originally went for, like, true historical accuracy so that, you know, catapult would be a real catapult, the battalion, like, they had an arrow launch, they had, like, different kinds of slingshots. And then they said that everybody, when they playtested it, everybody was trying to, like, lean down to get it to like shoot up higher, and he was like, no, not a catapult, it's just a cannon, or you know, they always basically tried to use it like a slingshot because that's just, it felt natural. Yeah. You know,
yeah,
so they finally just gave up and they said, all right, well, we'll just do this one kind of cannon, it'll just be like a slingshot essentially, and everybody will just shoot it with their arm movement in a specific way because everybody wanted to do it anyways. It was interesting to see these guys talk about utilizing a new tool and figuring out how people react to it when they're sitting in front of it.
It's going to be like this year's Fruit Ninja Kinect. You know what I mean? It's like sort of that level of casualness.
Or Doritos really, Crash Course.
Yeah, Doritos Crash Course. Don't get started.
It's a classic.
Yeah, so I mean, like, if you really want to be hardcore about it, you can. And if you just want to sit down for 5 minutes and blow stuff up, like, you can do that too. And it's going to be a ton of fun. Cool.
So I did not play Steel Battalion. I didn't have it in me to sit in front of the Kinect and feel like an idiot the entire time. I want to say, though, before you get into it, Scott, that I went over there and Cohen was walking with me, and Cohen's telling me about his experience. Now, Cohen doesn't own a Kinect,
right?
So he's not used to the hand motions that you have to kind of do in front of a Kinect to make it work the way you want. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. I kept trying to like grab a thing and then I wouldn't grab it. And then I do this, and my guy's hand would just like freeze in front of the screen and not move. And he's like, it just got really frustrating. He's like, maybe it's the game, you know, maybe it's the build. And we walk over there, and Scott sits down to start playing. And it's like this freaking, like, he's like a weird whiz kid with the Kinect where he's doing this stuff and everything's working dead perfectly. Like, you're like, pull down the periscope, do this, move this over, open your shutter, close your shutter. And, like, everything was just happening exactly the way you're moving your hands. And Cohen was 100% blown away the entire time. He's like, what is going on? This doesn't work this well.
The thing with the Kinect, and as we said before, I really like the Kinect. I really want to see stuff on the Kinect. The thing with the Kinect is that the tracking, like, it takes a long time for the representation of your body on a TV screen to catch up to what you're actually doing. But that's not necessarily representative of the speed at which the Kinect is actually tracking your body.
Yeah.
So if you wait for your on-screen representation to get to where you want it to go, it's probably too late. So what you can do in a game like Steel Battalion is just stick your arm out, grab something, and pull back, and the Kinect will track it. So yeah.
One thing we should mention that I realized until you sat down with the game is that you do use a hybrid of a controller and the Kinect during this game.
Yeah, I think this is a first for Kinect-based gaming, and I think that if this is successful in its implementation, I think this can really sort of open the door to like a new generation of like these like hybrid control scheme games, because what this game does lends itself very well to using the Kinect and the controller. So the controller is used primarily for driving the mech, for aiming and for shooting, like things that require a high degree of like fine tuning. And then the Kinect is used primarily for things that happen inside of your, I shouldn't call it a mech, they call it like a vertical tank. So things that happen inside the VT.
It's a mech.
It's a vertical tank.
Not a fucking mech.
We use the proper branding here on this podcast. so yeah, I mean like in the thing that kind of struck me as I was writing the review of this is that it's almost like there are two games. Like, because the world inside of the vertical tank is so rich because your crewmates are in there, that there's almost like a separate world to explore, like, inside of the tank. It's not just, like, the whole time your eyes are, like, inside the periscope or inside the viewport of the VT and you're just shooting people the whole time. Like, I think a lot of other games would just take that route. But Steel Battalion makes you, like, back away from the viewport of the VT and then start like messing around with the panels and the controls and like talking to your teammates inside. I think it probably reaches like my limit for things that I would be capable of doing with the Kinect without being overwhelmed. So I think it is challenging, but I don't think it's impossible to
figure out.
Well,
I mean, this game has a history of being challenging and overwhelming with controls. It's not like
right.
This is new to them. It's still, man, I want Minority Report mixed with, you know, BattleTech. I don't want this like old school shitty mech that barely works.
Yeah, that's the thing, and this turned up in other reviews too, is that this is not like a futuristic battle mech game. This is sort of like a low tech, like lived in Star Wars kind of world where like it's like World War II era technology. And the tanks do kind of lumber along. They're not necessarily fast, but neither are the enemy tanks. You know, imagine like storming a beach, you know, like in World War II, except you just happen to have like a vertical tank that's like lumbering behind you. And that's about the speed that you move at. So I think, I don't know what the original game was like, but there must be a reason for it in terms of like the wrinkles in the gameplay and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, there's a whole story behind it, like the tech getting reset. But it did look really cool. The stylization was dead on. I did love that they backed you into the cockpit a lot. It was neat to watch you interacting inside of the tank and it not always being that kind of HUD display of just shooting crap the entire time. So interesting. For me, it was like, man, I just don't know if this game's going to hold my attention for $60 worth, but
that's true. I mean, at least it's not $250 like the original was. And you know what else this game has that every Kinect game needs going forward? Virtual fist bumps.
Yeah.
Like after the completion of the tutorial, you back up into the VT and your guy next to you is like, "What's up, man?" Fist bump. And you actually do fist bump motion on the Kinect.
I failed, so my guy's arm just flopped lazily in front of the screen for 30 seconds.
Right.
I was like, "I'm fist bumping! Yeah. Fucking punch it in! Punch it in!" And he's like, "No."
If you do fail, like the rest of the characters inside of the VT are like, oh, you left him hanging, you're such a jerk, no, or whatever.
It was destroying my morale.
All right, do we need to take a break at this point?
I have to whiz like a mastodon.
Okay, so let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
Yeah. So Scott, I bought you a card game. I think for your birthday. Is that what I got it for?
Yep.
That's this fucking game.
Nightfall.
Oh my god!
I don't remember him disliking it that much. Did he?
Really? Was it that hard? Where's he going?
I don't know if he knows what game it is.
He can't. He can't hear.
Wait, what game? What game are you thinking that is?
Yeah, like, the one that was like insanely complicated, where you're like, "Oh, you need to, oh no, you just won." Remember that game we played for like 4 hours?
No, that was Adam's game.
Okay,
Joe brought that.
Okay,
over.
That was on Nightfall.
That was the Warhammer game.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. I was thinking of a different, really overly complicated card game.
I gotta find the name of this game now.
This was a deck builder called Nightfall. It had like werewolves and vampires in it, and we had guns and shit, and we shot each other. It was really not that complicated.
I don't remember.
There was like a chaining mechanic. That was the main mechanic of the game.
The other one was called like Lords of the Underbox intense.
Yeah, that one was called Chaos in the Old.
There we go. Lords of the Underbox is
that game was fucking hard.
It was really hard.
This game is relatively simple. It wasn't too bad.
Chaos in the Old World made me feel like somebody was making up the rules to the game on the spot.
Yes.
Which could have been happening, probably.
Yeah. But anyways, we're talking about Nightfall. And Nightfall is a deck building game. What's up?
Oh, you won.
Yeah. Right. That's how our Chaos in the Old World game ended, with somebody going, oh, it looks like you won. Game's over.
Yeah. That game made me want to take a fucking nap. Just like midway through it, I was just like, you know, this is just a head down kind of game.
So Scott, this is the iOS version of this card game, right?
Yes. So what's going on here is that a company named Playdeck is beginning to take these cool and popular card games and translating them into apps for iOS currently. And the thing that immediately, for anyone that's ever played any of these like card games, the thing that immediately comes to your mind is how do you represent all of this information like on an iPad screen? And luckily, the people at Playdeck have figured all that stuff out for you, because it all kind of works really well, surprisingly. Mm. Not surprisingly as a knock on Playdeck, but like surprisingly that even works at all, you know?
Yeah.
Because if you think about all the things that you need to see when you're playing a card game, and like sort of the frequency at which you need to check those things, it's kind of amazing. So I actually have a copy of it on my phone, which is like, that was the other thing, is that I sat down with the guy from Playdeck, and he's like, well, let's take a look at this game. And he walked me through the rules. I was familiar with the rules, and I was just trying to figure out, like, based on what I knew about the game, where to find that information on the screen that they designed.
Yeah.
And then once we got through that, I kind of stopped for a second. I was like, well, wait a minute. What does this game look like on the iPhone? And he's like, I happen to have it right here. And he pulled out his iPhone, and surprisingly, it doesn't look that much different. Pretty much the big difference between what you see on the iPad and what you see on the iPhone is that basically the bottom half of every card is cut off until you zoom in on it. And on the iPad, you can see the entire card and then zoom in on it to read the text. So, you know, if you're at the point where you're familiar enough with what all the cards look like, you know what the card does and what the effects do, and I think that's pretty common for a lot of games, especially if you're like a hardcore Magic player or something. You don't need to read the cards to know what they do. And I think, I mean, I've played like a few games of Nightfall just on my phone, and I already don't really need to look at the cards that much. So, do you have any questions? I mean, it's it's weird because we're not really talking about the game. We're just talking about the iOS implementation. And the short of it is that it works, and it kind of blows my mind that it even works at all.
That's pretty amazing.
Do you see this moving to Ascension and Dungeon Siege and all the other games? Well, or no?
Actually, it's funny you mention that because Playdeck has already implemented Ascension plus the first expansion for Ascension on iOS. So yeah, maybe I'll talk about some of the technical aspects of this
app. Did they mention Android at all?
I don't know that I asked about Android, and it might have something. It might have something to do with all of the different screen sizes on those platforms. It might be hard to.
I know. I heard it multiple times this weekend. There's too many screen sizes to support Android.
I think in this game it's actually a legitimate concern because of the play space and the stretching of the cards.
Yeah.
So let me talk about some of the technical features instead of talking about the actual game itself. So, this game supports offline and online play. It has Game Center integration. The online play, I think, is stored on their servers. If you do play online, you can play, I think, up to 5 people in a game, which can include AI. The AI has 3 skill levels.
Is it asynchronous or current?
Yeah, the game supports asynchronous play, that's probably the hardest part about the game is that, like, every turn basically requires input from every player.
Yeah.
So it makes the games pretty slow, but I've played a lot of games just like local, you know, against AI, and that's good enough for me because I just want to play. And it's almost like if you have a group of friends that will play this game with you, that's awesome. And if you don't, and you just want to play offline as a way to like sort of practice against AI so you can play the physical game, like when you do get your friends together, like I think that's a good way to go about doing it. That's not to say that online play is like impossible. I just think it's challenging right now because of like the involvement that's required. There's also a card gallery. So if you just want to browse cards, they have that rulebook tutorial. And it also has already built in. It has basically the architecture to implement the expansions for this game. Like Physical Nightfall probably has like 3 expansions with 1 more already planned. And then a bunch of promo cards too. And the game actually supports unlocking promo cards through like various gameplay achievements and stuff. So it's really awesome. Playdeck is the name of the company. They do have partnerships with a bunch of different card game makers. So if you check out their website, you can see what other games they're putting on iOS. And it's just kind of cool because if you're a card game fan and you can't always get a group of people together, this is a good alternative for that.
I want to say, and this is only recent to me because I just got one, and I'm going to keep saying that out loud. I think that the Fire could be the solution to them putting games out on an Android tablet because it's the number one selling tablet. It's only one size. You can restrict it into the Amazon market only.
I think you're right. I think if companies like mobile developers wanted to use the Kindle Fire as their core spec for screen size and then just kind of like see what other phones happen to fall under that scaling dimension. I think that would be good. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
I've probably played most of the other games on this list, so I don't know. Ash, do you want to talk about XCOM? Because I'm kind of excited about this.
Okay, absolutely. I'm more excited about this game than really anything else I saw at the show.
I'm actually excited.
Which is saying a lot. Thanks, man. A long, long time ago, 1994, I'll tell the shortened version of the story. I went to visit some friends in Southern California, and I got one of those old computer gaming magazines that would come with like a 3.5 floppy disk. And on the 3.5 floppy disk was a demo for XCOM UFO Defense. So I plugged it into my friend's computer, and the demo was only like one level of XCOM, but I played that demo for like the entire 3 weeks that I was there, and I became completely just enamored with this game. I absolutely loved it, and there was something about it, about how incredibly difficult and challenging it was. So by the time I got home, I begged and pleaded, and I was able to get the retail release of XCOM, and It was unlike anything that I had ever really played before. It was a turn-based strategy game where your units, they stay with you from level to level, from mission to mission. You can research alien technology and build new technology, and you can equip your guys with whatever you find and different armor pieces and all that fun stuff. So it had a lot of depth to it, which is probably why I loved it so much. And, you know, it was an overhead kind of three-quarters-esque view, I suppose. And you had to navigate these really intricate maps and keep your troops alive while eliminating enemies and capturing them and stuff like that. So it became one of my favorite strategy titles of all time. And unfortunately, it never really got a real, like, solid proper sequel. There were a couple spin-offs that weren't really made by the original dev team and stuff like that, which was MicroProse. And I always kind of really wanted it. So a couple years ago, I hear they're coming out with XCOM FPS, and I'm like, it's not the same thing. It doesn't even look the same. What the hell? And
it was really weird, wasn't it? Wasn't it like old 50s guys and
fedoras it was shooting lasers? Bizarro. Like, I didn't really understand the link at all. It seemed like a totally different IP. And then last year I got wind that Firaxis was making a true sequel to, or a reimagining of XCOM with the same formula, the same turn-based strategy that we kind of, you know, loved back in the old days. And so I went to the panel at PAX East, and the whole, you know, not the whole dev team, but the, you know, the lead producer and the graphic artist and, you know, a whole, you know, group of them were there. And what I discovered was that they all kind of grew up the same as me, loving this game and wanting to really do this game justice. So it wasn't a money grab. It wasn't anything. They were making a true XCOM game out of their love of XCOM. And it really, really shows. It's, if you took modern technology and modern game design and applied it to that old formula, and you got Enemy Island. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful to look at. The animation is phenomenal. Environments are all destructible. It is quite possibly one of the slickest looking turn-based strategy games I've ever seen. It's just ridiculous looking.
I was looking this up on the Wikipedia page, and you can tell me if this is true or something you knew ahead of time. It said that this game is a reimagining remake of the 1994 classic strategy game UFO Enemy Unknown, also known as XCOM UFO Defense. Did you know or see that this was a remake?
Yeah, I did actually. I was aware of that. So they're taking, you know, so it's not a sequel. It is essentially just a reimagining or a remake of the original old game. But the technology is so new that it's almost, it's like a completely different game. I mean, the old game was just so ancient. I mean, just graphically, it was almost ridiculous. But what they're doing is they're taking, you know, they're taking those classic enemies and the classic gear, and they're modernizing it. So for instance, like the staple enemy in the first XCOM was a little thing called a sectoid. And a sectoid was like, looks like a gray alien, you know, like kind of grayish skin, big bug eyes. But the sectoids in the original game, when they tried to make them into 3D characters for this new game, they realized they just resembled naked children. I guess their death sound was like a crying scream. So when they were playtesting the game, people became very disturbed because there's these really like intricate 3D models of naked children who are getting like gunned down with like heavy machine guns, who are like crying and screaming, and they're like, to change these to make them a little bit more feral and a little bit, you know, scarier to look at. But I think, okay, the thing that, just to plug XCOM one last time, that makes it truly amazing, is the characters that you have, your units, right? They carry over from match to match, and they're completely customizable. You can name them whatever you want, you know, old school style. And so you'll just get, like, for instance, a sniper from Russia, and he'll come with a preset name. But if you want to name him something, you know, like Ash, just call him. So the sniper from Russia will be named Ash. Well, if Ash goes into battle and Ash is like killed by aliens, you can never use Ash again. He's gone. Okay, so you get really invested in these characters. If you have like a veteran sniper that you've had for 10 matches, you know, 10 multiple actions, you develop your own relationship with this character, even though they're not voiced, even though there's nothing really significant or special about this character. Well, you have your own story that you're forging with these basically like little toys, you know, these little characters that after 10 missions, they are special to you and you don't want to see anything happen to them. So rather than letting this, you know, level 10 Ash die, You'll probably reload the whole damn match and make sure that they don't die. And, you know, the developers were talking about that during the panel, and everybody I know that's ever played XCOM did that. Like, you would play for, you'd play the same level 5, 6, 7 times, you know, for 3 hours each time, just so you could get through with all your guys and make sure nobody dies.
That's amazing. Yeah, it seems fantastic.
Yeah, it is. It's a great, great game. And definitely, if you guys are interested in Enemy Unknown, a lot of video footage and stuff that leaked from the panel, so you get to kind of see what combat looks like and why it is as innovative as it is. It's turn-based strategy, but it's also very, very fast-paced. Beautiful animation. So, like, for instance, when you use a sniper rifle, it'll actually show kill animations and everything for your kills. It sort of resembles the same sort of motion and animation as Valkyria Chronicles. So really fluid, really nice. It doesn't feel like a strategy game. It feels like you're almost like watching a little movie. So,
and it looks like this game is coming out of Firaxis. So if you had any concerns about the underlying like nuts and bolts of the numbers of the game, I don't think you have anything to worry about.
Yeah.
'Cause these are the guys that do Civilization and, you know, Sid Meier's Pirates and all this stuff. Like, that's their pedigree. So I think if you want to get into the numbers, this will be a good game for doing that, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely.
So good. Who's played Rock Band Blitz?
I played Rock Band Blitz. Ash, did you have a chance
to play? No, I didn't get a chance to. I watched a lot of people play, but I did not get a chance to.
I didn't get to play either, and I really just want to know what makes this game not Space Channel 5.
Okay, so Space Channel 5 was
the rhythm game.
Yeah, I remember. It was a bizarre rhythm game, and this is a little different. I guess on the surface it does look similar to a lot of these like beat matching games that are that you can download through Steam or whatever.
Or like Elite Beat Duo, the DS game.
Yeah, I guess what they do in this game is that they tell you that you can play all of the instruments simultaneously. So it's an arcade title, so it's supposed to be kind of like a Blitz almost, you know right. what I mean? Oh, that's the name. I don't know why I just used that word. I just made that up. Kryptonesia. It's my own word. It's a Blitz, you guys.
Harmonix should use that.
Yeah. Okay, so, the basic idea is that it is a score attack type game. But what they do is they give you all 5 tracks or 4 tracks or whatever. They give you all the tracks of a song spread out together. But they've distilled all the tracks down really into like 2 buttons. So there's like a left button and a right button. And then you can toggle between which track you're currently playing and then kind of like hit the left and right buttons on those tracks too. There's also a number of power-ups that you can, I guess, select and customize to take with you into the game to activate them at different times and increase your score. And really, like, I didn't really play through the tutorial. I just kind of like picked a song and started playing. It was a lot of fun. Like, it is an arcade game, so it's like it's not really the same as like picking up a plastic controller, but I don't think that's like really the point of the game. And then after I played, like, somebody was standing, like a Harmonix person was standing nearby, and they were like, "What'd you think?" And I was like, I had no idea what I was doing, but I was having a good time. I was like, I played the track that had the most notes on it because I thought that'd give me the most points. And then he told me, he was like, "Well, you can do that, but you actually need to kind of keep the multipliers going on every track on the board." So,
oh, wow.
It's actually like there's actually a certain strategy involved with the challenge of you getting between these tracks, finding out when the multipliers appear on those tracks, and then using your power-ups intelligently to maximize your score. And I think I've figured out that's what the game is about, but I could be wrong about part of that, but I do know that it comes with 25 new songs and that all of the songs from your current Rock Band library will be able to be used in Rock Band Blitz.
And isn't it the other way too, that those 25 new songs will also be available in Rock Band 3 or whatever?
I want to say yes, but I'm not 100% confident on that.
I'm pretty sure that our friends who sat at every Harmonix panel that happened that day said that that's what it was. I'm not 100%, but I think that's what they said.
So yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like a fun game. It's like a way to like sort of take a more casual approach. I mean, Rock Band's pretty casual as it is, but sort of like a more like 5-minute experience.
Like single player.
Yeah, yeah.
This is you sitting around enjoying playing a rhythm song by yourself, not necessarily with 4 of your friends.
And, you know, and it's also kind of cool that, like, it uses this entire library that you've spent all this time amassing anyways. So
yeah.
just like it's just another way to enjoy the Rock Band experience and enjoy the music that you have.
I will make a quick anecdote. I went to the Harmonix podcast live thing on Sunday.
Okay, yeah.
And they talked about this game, and one of the things they talked about was that I guess at GDC, they were demoing this game to people without announcing it yet. They had made no announcements. They were going to announce it the next week after GDC, but they hadn't yet. Mm-hmm. So they were like, okay, you know, we're letting some, like, you know, that top tier press play it and some other devs get in and play it. And I can't remember who they said it was, but one of their friends who's like a dev at Disney or somewhere else was there and just kind of hanging out. And they said they bought all this kettle corn, and he had the whole bowl of kettle corn. He was just sitting in the back eating kettle corn, watching everybody play Rock Band Blitz. And they said that he was like sick too, and he was on a bunch of medication or something. He got up and he had to like leave because he realized that he was late for a demo that he was supposed to be doing at GDC.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh crap. And he like got up and ran out. And then, Eric Pope and John, I forget his name, John something, the other guy on the community team. And Eric said that John all of a sudden shot out of air and went running out of the room, like out of the blue, just like stood up and like went flying out of the room. And then Eric was like, and there was a guy playing, so he kind of like was with him. He's like, yeah, no, you're doing it right. He's like, what the hell is going on? And then like John came running back in. He's like, dude, and he holds his phone up to Eric. And on the phone is the guy who just left the room was like, just left hanging out with the Harmonix guys. Rock Band Blitz is going to be rad. And they had not announced the game at all.
Oh, wow.
Like, casually tweeted out that this game was going on. And they're like trying to call him, and he wasn't answering his phone. And then he finally answered, and they're like, dude, we are not announcing that game yet. You've got to delete that tweet now. And he's like, I'm so sorry. And they said that somebody else saw him on the floor of GDC. And he was like sweating and barely holding the interview that he was supposed to be doing because he's like trying to delete this thing and like all of his adrenaline was pumping because he just ruined Harmonix's like big reveal. Oh, they're gonna release.
Wow. That's actually a good segue because I was invited into the BioWare base a little bit early because I don't know, I got lucky and we become pretty good friends with Hillary Shapiro, who was a member of Crabcat, and she was actually working at the base, and she's written some stuff for us, and she's super cool, and we play games with her, and she's a good friend. And I showed up, and she's like, oh, come on in. So I walked in, and literally all the devs were there, and they're still setting up, and I'm kind of walking around like deer in the headlights, like, I should not be here. Like, this is like hallowed ground, and I was like totally – I don't really get nervous at crap like this too much anymore, but like to be around – all the BioWare guys that I'm like, you know, completely obsessed with. It was like, you know, like seeing the Beatles for me. Yeah. So I was super excited and I'm walking in and they're just sitting there fucking around on the laptop. And it was like Mike Gamble, who's a producer on Mass Effect, and Mike Laidlaw was there, who's of course, you know, in charge of Dragon Age. And they had this laptop open, and on the laptop is all the Operation Resurgence stuff. So they had the trailer streaming for Operation Resurgence. So all of a sudden I look over and there's like a Krogan Vanguard and a Batarian. And none of this has been announced yet. The press release isn't out yet. And I'm just sitting there staring at it like, this is blowing my fucking mind. What is this? Yeah. And like, they've been looking at it for like weeks probably. So they're not even like, they don't give a shit.
They don't care anymore.
But yeah. Here I am with my media badge and I'm like looking at it like, I cannot say a word of this. I cannot say a word of this. And I'm just like totally like super excited. And like Hillary introduced me to everybody. And then I just like walked out of that room like right before it opened. And I tweeted out and I was like, I just saw some things that in a few hours, you guys are going to shit your pants. And lo and behold, like 2 hours after I left, the press release came out inside. And then it was, you know, the whole Resurgence multiplayer pack was released. But that was my moment where I definitely could have fucked up. But I did not, which was cool. So, but I did want to give a quick shout out to Hillary, and then of course to Fernando Mello, who is a good buddy of our site as well. And he actually was kind enough to allow me to camp out between both panels, so I didn't have to go in, which would have really sucked. So we were.
That's what I did.
Yeah, Scott didn't trust in the nerd appropriate power. He's like, it was like totally. You know what it reminded me of? You know in Total Recall where Chico was his name? Chico. He runs with an explosive thing around his head. Remember that scene?
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
Schwarzenegger was like, "No, Chico, don't go running outside." Yeah. Chico's
like, at the beginning
Chico's
of
Chico's like at the beginning. I gotta make a break for it. And Chico goes running and his head explodes. Well, Scott was the same way. I'm like, Scott, just hang out. I'm going to ask Fernando if we can stay for the panel. And Scott's just like getting all shifty. He's like looking back and forth, looking back and forth. And he's like, I'm going to go get in line. And just like got up and just like got the fuck out of there. And I was just like, oh man, where'd Scott go?
And here's the funny thing is that as soon as I walked outside, I hear, the line is full. We're not letting any other people in the line.
Yeah. It was a sad moment. It was a sad moment.
And I just went. Yeah, I was really sad. I went and did something else, but
So Fernando was super cool, and he let us hang out, and I took a lot of pictures of the cosplayers and did some coverage of both of the panels, and it turned out pretty well. But you know, I can't. It's hard because as a video game journalist, I'm supposed to be neutral, but in reality, the BioWare guys are also fucking nice. I just want to like be buddies with them, so I'm not really neutral. So they're just an incredibly nice bunch of people.
It's the same as we said with Robot Entertainment. You know, I mean, there's just some groups out there that are awesome and make awesome things, and we're fans of them. I mean, we're still people. We're not like...
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, and I hardly would call us video game journalists, so...
Well, I mean, that's what the badge says, but I'm typically just
video game.
A nerd.
I think we're video game opinionists.
Opinionists?
Sure.
Aficionados?
I think we're kind of out of time, but what I wanted to do really quick is maybe each one of us get a minute or so to just kind of wrap up our thoughts on PAX and then call it a day.
That sounds perfect. Who wishes to begin?
Ash, you begin.
All right. Well, I love events like this. I had been wanting to go to PAX for quite a while, and this was my second PAX East, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed having lots of people there. And I do have to say, we got to meet some people that have been really kind to our site. People like Bethany and Allegra and people that tweet us frequently and give a crap about the stuff that we do, and people like Drac. And it was really, really cool to have that sense of community at an event like this, which I think is really what it's all about, at least for me. It's about being around other people that care about the same stuff that I care about. And it was just, you know, this time of year in Boston, the weather was fucking perfect. And it was like just a great, great weekend. It was a great event and it was exhausting. And I'm still completely exhausted from the weekend. I haven't had time to recover, but it is amazing. So if you've never been to a PAX, sell your kidney or something and just find a way to get there because it is so worth it. You guys don't even have any idea if you've never been. So, Scott?
You know, like I guess I talked a little bit at the beginning of the podcast about this, and really what I thought PAX was going to be is that I thought it was going to be 3 days of standing in line waiting to play video games. And it turned out that it was like it's more than that, and it's hard to like sort of articulate why it's more than that. But if you look at all the different things that are happening, like with the video game rooms and the classic gaming and like the Nerdcore shows a night and 8-bit music and like Kickstarter. Like there's so much extra stuff going on there that, that you can find. There's something there for everybody. And I feel like it's not so overwhelming that, you know, you certainly can't do it all at once, but you really just need to figure out what it is you like about this and go do it. And I also picked up 150 friends on StreetPass. So that was pretty awesome too.
Nice.
Was it 150? Is that your final number?
Something like that. I have like 175 people in my plaza right now. So kudos to my fellow 3DS owners, and thank you for helping me beat Street Pass games. It's awesome.
I left my 3DS at home. I mean, you know, I can't echo much harder the things you guys say, which is that this convention is like no other that I've been to, where it's just a big group of people getting along and really loving the thing that they're there for, which is gaming in general. I hesitate to even call it a video game festival because, you know, you wander over that tabletop side and there are times where that area is packed. If there's a Magic tournament going on or, D&D is doing something big, or now Pathfinder, which is getting really big, was doing stuff there. The board game rental stuff is all awesome. And I still this year, even after saying it last year, did not spend as much time as I wanted to in tabletop. I think it's a really interesting area. It's just such an awesome experience. I just have a lot of fun going to it, and I can't read what he's writing. Going to it and hanging out. And I regret that I actually, because of work, I did not get to meet the people who frequent our site, and I wish I had gotten a chance to say hi to them. But you know, there's plenty more conventions coming, and I'm sure we'll get that chance at some point. But I had a blast again. I think every time we go, I hope we can bring more people with us each time and do something cooler each time we do it, because it's just such a fun experience and such a great crowd.
Big thanks to Cohen as well. He was an absolute blast to hang out with, and it made me realize how much I miss that fella. So
and it was really cool. Like, you know, we had horrible sleeping conditions because yet again the nerd appropriate curse of having one king size bed in the room
for four dudes. It was definitely a love fest. I'll never be the same again, if you know what I mean.
Scott made a little chair fort to sleep in, and then there was the shifty flat bed that was on top of the concrete floor. What would it be without that?
We made it happen.
So it's just a blast, and I'm looking forward to doing it again next year. And I don't think I'm going to make PAX Prime because of work, but I am definitely making PAX East again. So just awesome, awesome times. And the guys and Ash and I also. This year, we didn't do it last year, I don't think, Ash, but this year we went to the PAX, like, Penny Arcade Media Panel, which is the guys from Penny Arcade just kind of taking questions and answers from us lowly, third-tier media guys. And they are just the nicest dudes and really honest and open about things, and you can kind of just ask them whatever about, you know, running a website, and they'll sit there and answer it and tell you what's going on.
That was pretty incredible. They did kind of catch me off guard though. Like, Matt and I walked in like 5 minutes late because I think we were in the bathroom or something. And Mike and Jerry, literally before we even, our butts are in the seat, they're like, "Hey, what's up guys? You guys have any questions?" Like, we're not even saying that. I was just like,
I have a question really quickly. And was like, "I just want to say thank you to you guys for running such an awesome con." And I was like, "Thank God, because I had nothing." So, awesome convention and highly recommended by, I think, all three of us. I'm so glad you got to go this year, Scott.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to next year, or maybe Prime. I don't know. I know Celebration is right before Prime, so we'll see how much con we can squeeze out of me in 1 month.
It comes up so fast on East. It's not like, it's not 6 months away. It's like 4 months away, and it just comes really quickly. Isn't it right around Comic-Con, Ash? Is it really close to that?
No, it's in August.
Prime?
Yeah, it's August.
I think next week we'll probably do like a couple more PAX East items and then get back to our normal format and keep on rolling.
And thank you for, you know, the positive comments that we have gotten on the site redesign. It was a labor of love, and I'm really happy to have gotten it out in time for PAX. So hope you guys enjoy it, and it's a little more easy to use.
It is blowing up.
It is. It is.
I like it because right now Ash is hitting that point at night where he's exhausted, and he kind of looks like he's wheelchair bound in that chair right now.
Oh.
Neck just like limp in the back of the chair.
I'm fucking tired, man.
Oh, I know.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening to Rated NA episode 55.
Guys, I'll see you in a few hours.
Yep.
Later.